B, to corrupt our judiciary system to the point where rule by established law is replaced with rule by the arbitrary decisions of biased men. C, to convert our legislative bodies into fuzzy rubber stamps for giving a semblance of legality to the usurpations of power by the executive branches of government. D, to eliminate all differences between our two major political parties, and thus to convert our national elections into a gigantic stage-managed show. E, to establish an entrenched communist-controlled bureaucracy which assures the continuity of pro-communist policies right through all election periods and afterwards, regardless of the election results. F, to bring about the piecemeal but increasingly drastic surrender of sovereignty over our own national affairs to international organizations. G, to establish and enforce the completely unconstitutional principle that treaty law supersedes domestic law and even our Constitution itself. H, to have our government interlock our affairs with those of other nations and assume an imperialistic responsibility for the supposed welfare of other nations all over the world. I, to allow and even encourage armed insurrections and open sedition to run wild from one end of our country to the other. And J, to create so vast a bureaucracy that the framework for a police state socialist system is already at hand. Parallel to these drives of a more tangible nature, there has been a continuous and pervasive psychological campaign to eliminate the whole concept of nationalism. Loyalty to country is constantly disparaged, especially by politicians in high places. This movement and the activities identified above to destroy the United States as the independent nation which we inherited are all simply parts of the total communist program being carried out right before our eyes. Section 10. The communists know that they cannot possibly permit any other loyalty except to the communist state. So they have proceeded for a long time on the principle that they simply had to destroy the three basic human loyalties: loyalty to country, loyalty to family, and loyalty to God. We have just touched on their attempt to discredit all loyalty to country and to make every person think of himself as a citizen of the world. Not nearly so well recognized, but of even greater importance to the communists, is the weakening of all loyalty to the family and eventual destruction of the family altogether as anything more than a temporary arrangement for economic convenience. As a huge first step in this direction, and as a major objective in itself, all children in America are to be brought, as they already have been in Soviet Russia, to look to the government and be grateful to the government, instead of to their parents, for the food they eat, the clothes they wear, the room they sleep in, the education they receive, and whatever recreation or pleasures may be provided for them. In the ultimate stage of this sinister development, the child will be taken completely and officially out from under any parental influence and subjected formally and continuously to the brutalizing physical training and mental brainwashing of the communist state. This plan is succeeding so well and has already been carried so far that it is time to change the name of our public schools to government schools. It may shock you to realize it, but that is what they really are today. Your so-called public schools are no longer agencies of the parents, established and run by groups of parents as a means of carrying out their parental responsibility for the education of their children. These schools have already become agencies of government, and thus a means of indoctrinating the growing generation with the falsehoods, beliefs, and outlook which government wants them to have. And this is a government, let us assure you, which for all practical purposes is, and for the last preceding five administrations has been, controlled by the communists. Of course, they always advance this control into new fields, mainly by pressures and propaganda, rather than by force, as they are now doing with regard to sex education in the schools, which, among other purposes, removes from parents almost the last vestige of responsibility for the upbringing and the character of their children. At present, the communists have a real battle on their hands over this issue. And while they will use all the force of the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, and of other government agencies to help them put over their program, they do not yet dare have the federal government simply order all public schools to adopt this program. That, if they are successful, will come later, as it has already come in connection with such matters as patriotism, where a subordinate of Attorney General Ramsey Clark boasted that of course they would transfer a high school history teacher to some other job if he insisted on teaching American history contrary to the government's wishes. Remember, however, that the communists seek to destroy our whole civilization. And the family has been a fundamental structural unit and a tremendously stabilizing influence in this civilization. So their plans and interests go much further than simply seizing control of and gradually warping the minds of our children. They want it to become standard practice for this sociological brick called the family to be made without straw or without any ingredient or reinforcement to give it strength. Then all such bricks will universally and automatically crumble under the pressures which are placed upon society as a whole. There are many drives for these purposes. A. One such campaign is to have our young people raised in complete ignorance of the cost, in the sweat and blood and tears of their ancestors, of either the spiritual or material aspects of the life which they have inherited. Today's children in the United States are growing up to take for granted that providence or fate or some mysterious force with which they are not concerned simply placed on this earth the houses and factories and highways and churches and theaters and recreation fields and the automobiles and wristwatches and television sets and farms and packing plants and dairies and all the marvelous system of distribution and of service which makes it possible for them to live like kings. They take for granted that the freedoms which they enjoy of movement, of interests, of occupation, if any, of hobbies, of pleasures, and of choice about almost every aspect of their lives are something natural, also supplied them by providence or fate, and without any concern for the lives that were sacrificed and the hardships that were suffered to provide this best environment for the human race that the world has ever seen, our young people actually think they are being noble in their rebelliousness against a system of which they have no understanding. It is perfectly obvious as an axiom and supported empirically by all historical experience that equal people can never be free, for the simple reason that free people will never remain equal. But these youngsters, as somebody has said, have never read the minutes of the last meeting. They not only do not have the slightest grasp of the fact that they are literally the heirs of all the ages, but they have been sold on the idea of destroying their inheritance without ever even recognizing its value, all of which is the result of deliberate, patient, and cunning effort on the part of a vast, destructive, and criminal conspiracy. B. Our young people are being encouraged from the earliest age and by every means which such communist-dominated influences as the National Education Association can devise, not only to regard the state rather than their parents as responsible for their welfare, but to look on their parents with increasing scorn, to regard themselves as smarter and wiser and more progressive than their parents, to flout all experience as something to which they are automatically superior, and gradually to acquire a feeling of open and active hostility, not only toward their parents, but toward all authority of every kind. In fact, the most famous and infamous contemporary philosopher of this whole exciting theme of youthful bitterness, a professed Marxist named Herbert Marcuse, has acquired his worldwide notoriety largely on the basis of his argument that all youth in general should be in combat with all their elders in general. And by combat, Marcuse has made clear through both his language and his actions that he means armed and destructive insurrection, all of which, of course, exactly serves communist purposes. C. The American home used to be a permanent headquarters of individuals bound closely together with major beliefs, interests, and loyalties held generally in common. It is being reduced to a meeting place of temporary convenience for individuals who expect their ties to each other to become of less and less strength and importance, or at least this is what the communists are trying to bring about. The most direct measure for accomplishing this, of course, is development of the readier acceptance of divorce and of the greater ease by which divorce may be obtained. And that the communists are doing all they can to speed up this development is too obvious for either statistics or argument to be needed. D. Finally, in this section, let's mention the continuous and many-sided efforts to destroy the religious base, the moral significance, and the spiritual sanctity of marriage. To whatever extent the communists are able to have their own way, especially with this sex education in the schools from kindergarten to high school that they are now trying to put across, practically all young couples will have engaged in sexual intercourse before their wedding, and marriage will become, in this country, as it already is in communist parts of the world, nothing more than a civil contract formalized by a civil service without any religious or moral significance and having no attributes of a different quality from any other contractual agreement. And this whole purpose is being carried forward, of course, by the communist-promoted drive, especially among our young people, to make premarital sex relations commonplace adultery a delightful custom, and monogamy a subject of ridicule. And again, our whole point is that all of these promotions and trends are carefully plotted parts of the total design of the communists for first destroying civilization in America, as elsewhere, and then fastening their despotic rule over the resulting ruins. Section 11. Even more important to the communists on their list of targets for destruction than loyalty to family is loyalty to God. From the very beginning of their conspiracy, they have realized, unceasingly impressed on all members of the conspiracy, and boldly informed the world that all religion had to be destroyed before their rule over the planet could be established and maintained. At the time of the French Revolution, and for 100 years thereafter, the conspirators engaged in a frontal attack on religion, on both the planes of philosophy and of action. Eventually, however, the communists became smart enough and patient enough to go to work on their greatest enemy, Christianity, by the only method at which they have ever been successful in overcoming any enemy, namely by infiltration and distortion and erosion and destruction from the inside. There is one simple key which explains how the communists have been so successful at infiltrating the clergy. It is that preachers do not become communists, but communists do become preachers. When some young man is converted during his college years into a hardcore communist, without having the wealth of the family background to be taken directly into the circle of insiders, the question arises on or before his graduation as to what he can best do for the cause. By the 1920s, a considerable number of them were being told to go to a theological seminary, come out as ordained ministers, and then proceed to use that position of great influence, cautiously but cleverly and effectively, for the benefit of the communist advance. So that by about 1950, the communists already had in the Protestant ministry their 3% of the total, which is all they need to control any committee, any group, any organization, or any population. For the communists always know exactly what they're trying to promote, and they are both brilliantly cunning and utterly ruthless in that promotion, while everybody else flounders around in the usual manner of committee and group activities. In the Catholic Church, this process of infiltration was much slower, for a number of reasons. One was that a young hardcore communist, on being ordered to go through all the necessary motions and pretenses in order to become a priest, had to forego the possibility of marriage, had to spend anywhere from 7 to 12 years in the Catholic seminaries, and had to make many other more visible sacrifices of normal life for the sake of his hypocritical role. There was a great deal more time and expense involved for the communists, and a much greater risk that any particular agent would lose his enthusiasm and defect from the cause before he ever became a priest. But despite these problems, the procedure was diligently continued, with the result that today more and more so-called priests are beginning to show up on the American scene and become active in communist-instituted turmoil around them, as well as influential in communist-dominated schools and colleges, who are not really priests at all. They are actually communists parading in priests' clothing. Some of the more subtle and clever among them even climb in time into higher levels of the hierarchy. And because of the immense respect and authority accorded by Catholics to their priests, every one of these men, even as a parish pastor, can do a tremendously effective job of helping to tear down the Catholic Church, the American economic and political system, and our whole civilization as well. Through this continuous infiltration of both communist personnel and communist influence into both the Protestant and eventually even the Catholic churches, the communists now feel increasingly able to bring about a transformation of organized Christianity from the inside into a gigantic machine in support of what is called the social gospel and for the promotion of revolutionary principles and purposes in general. In fact, they are now undertaking to merge Christianity and communism into one temporal philosophy. They can thus more easily beguile millions of Christians, or of people who still regard themselves as Christians, into believing the humanitarian pretenses of various communist movements and into supporting many segments of the one biggest lie, which is that communism has any sincere interest whatsoever in the welfare of the people. And they can thus also be moving the pieces into place for the materialization of their ultimate goal, which is to bring not just Christian churches, but all organized religion everywhere and of every kind into one homogeneous monolithic body which will serve simply as a worldwide propaganda agency for maintaining the worldwide rule of a communist regime. Religion itself will have been completely destroyed, but its temporal framework will have been taken over and molded into the service of the atheists who destroyed it. With that much background in mind, therefore, it becomes much easier to understand the origin, the development, and the purposes of such widely varied phenomena as the following. 1. The preaching of Marxism under the brilliantly deceptive name of the social gospel from the pulpits of our churches. 2. The participation by members of the clergy in civil rights marches and insurrectionary disturbances of every kind. 3. The massive lobbying by representatives of the National Council of Churches in support of the troublemaking civil rights legislation of recent years. 4. The bringing together with great good fellowship and ostentatious accord in purpose of American church leaders and so-called church leaders of the communist countries in the World Council of Churches. 5. The immense breakdown of tradition, authority, unity, and purpose within the Catholic Church. 6. The open and growing support by thousands of members of the Protestant clergy of homosexuality and other forms of sexual perversion. 7. The widespread promotion by the National Council of Churches of book lists recommending the most obscene and blasphemous and revolutionary books by known communists, comsimps, and criminals. 8. The increasing welcome given by even Catholic colleges to the most brazenly blasphemous, revolutionary, and spiritually subversive perverts and traitors on the American scene. 9. The desecration of our churches themselves by services and activities which make a mockery of all religion. And 10. The promotion by church bodies and church leaders, both Catholic and Protestant, of so-called training programs and seminars and miscellaneous movements which subtly undermine all the fundamental bases of religious belief and purposes. Again, let us insist, all of these things are but related parts of one overall program, and that is a program to promote the communist advance through destructiveness, chaos, and confusion to an absolute tyranny over the ruins that will be left. Section 12, which brings us to the last and now the most important of all the categories of communist plans and efforts that we can deal with tonight. This one comprises the manifold and varied drives to destroy all morality. The communists are not concerned about whether moral principles are based on revealed religion or on a distillation of man's best customs, manners, traditions, and experience. They do not care in the least, for instance, whether adultery is regarded as a sin because the Bible says so, or because man has learned the value of monogamy as a support of solidity and happiness in a civilized society. All the communists want in this connection is to promote adultery among us, because it will help them to destroy the American character and the Americanist civilization. And the same thing is true for every other form of immorality and crime now being so successfully instigated, condoned, encouraged, and even glorified by the communists and their dupes and allies who permeate our whole social organization. As a consequence of this design, we see all around us today carefully plotted and extensively conducted campaigns to bring about the following results. A. The much greater and rapidly increasing use of narcotic drugs, especially among young people. B. The much more frequent and more immoderate use of alcohol, again, especially among the young. C. A degrading, debilitating, and disease-producing promiscuousness with regard to sexual relations, aggravated by a steadily growing acceptance and practice of sexual perversion. D. An incredible ubiquitousness of filth and pornography on our newsstands, on the stage, in our movies, over the air, and now to a considerable extent already in our schools, our churches, and our social gatherings of every variety. E. The rapidly increasing amount of crime of every nature, from petty theft and crooked vote counting to rape and murder. F. The huge amount of deliberate vandalism and arson, not even for the material benefit of those committing such crimes, but purely for the sake of the destructiveness itself. G. The generally condoned and even widely glorified rebellion against all authority carried to flagrantly criminal excesses. H. The widespread exhibitionism with regard to dirty clothes, dirty bodies, dirty language, and obviously dirty minds as supposedly representing some form of protest against the existing order. I. The constant encouragement and actual reward by welfare agencies of the production of illegitimate children. J. The propagation and acceptance of outright treason, even in the highest circles of government, and even when it costs the lives of American boys fighting in the uniform of their country, as merely a form of disagreement rather than a crime. K. The ready acceptance of deliberate lies by government, press, pulpit, and college as simply a normal part of present-day communication. L. and the attempted gradual conversion of our whole educational system from kindergarten to college into a vast propaganda machine on behalf of every hypocrisy, foulness, and crime which the communists have been able to promote on our contemporary scene. Our main point, once again, and for the last time in such a connection, is that every one of these campaigns to eliminate morality and destroy character is an integral part of the communist program for establishing their tyranny over the people of the United States. That finishes the survey of our 8 categories. It would be helpful to cover many more and to look much more thoroughly at the extensive ramifications of those we have inspected. But all of these further pieces would simply round out the same premise, and this presentation has to be kept to the limits of a synopsis rather than an encyclopedia. So we must move on to our final section, dealing with the problem of preventing the ultimate catastrophe that is bearing down upon us. Section 13. The question immediately arises, of course, as to whether anything can be done about this greatest crime in history. And our confident answer is that it certainly can, precisely because this is a deliberately plotted crime. If the tragedy now enveloping the American nation and the brutal slavery now threatening the American people were the result of natural sociological forces at work, such as occurred during the declining centuries of every successful civilization, reversing the trend would be a superhuman task. But for a nation or an individual, preventing murder is altogether different from prolonging life indefinitely against natural diseases. So let us restate the actual situation. The still young, still strong, and until a generation ago still healthy, organic body of the American civilization is being willfully murdered by a long-range conspiracy of power-seeking criminals to serve their own evil ambitions. In order gradually to accomplish this murder, disguised as natural death, as has been many a murder before it, these megalomaniacs are insidiously attacking and weakening their intended victim with every form of poison for both body and mind, and with every form of direct material mistreatment that their diabolical intention and experience can possibly bring into play, including, but not limited to, all of those methods that we have listed in the earlier sections of this analysis. What's more, this is planned to be not only a secret murder, but by a secret and unidentified criminal. For more essential to the total plot than any of its segments which we have discussed is the unceasing effort of the conspirators to keep the world, and especially the American people, from realizing that there even is a conspiracy. The insiders issue countless statements and go through tireless motions with the fawning support of a subservient press which they now control to maintain the colossal pretense that the communists and the anti-communists are engaged in an ideological struggle. The philosophies of collectivism and of conservatism are supposed to be battling against each other on the academic and political levels for the intellectual acceptance that will bring victory to either side. To emphasize the value of this sham, Moscow even issued instructions on January 1, 1969, in the form of an editorial in International Affairs, which contained the following sentence, quote, "The struggle between capitalism and socialism in the sphere of ideology and politics is becoming ever more acute. The ideological front is now developing into the most important one in this struggle." End of quotation. In fact, so vital is this deception to the strategy of the insiders that they welcome and sometimes even subsidize the most vigorous opposition to their collectivist program, provided that opposition is kept on an academic or political plane with no mention of the conspiracy at work underneath. The whole show is an enormous fraud. Of course, the total communist propaganda wins over a few deluded converts who become revolutionary stooges. And of course, the left-wing politicians, some of whom are insiders and some of whom are merely demagogic opportunists, make full use of this propaganda with all of its lies and impossible promises to advance collectivist and welfare measures which lead toward total government. But the real drive is well below all of this superficial debate. Under cover of the ideological confrontation, the conspirators are using every conceivable form of diplomacy, deception, pressure, coercion, bribery, crime, treason, and terror to destroy the present social order and to seize more and more power at every turn. They then claim that these acquisitions of power are the result of ideological conquests. As good a key as can be found to the whole spirit and nature of the conspiracy lies in the slogan with which its earlier members helped to foment all the horror of the French Revolution. That slogan was Liberté, Égalité, Fraternité. It did not actually move many of the mob to action. Even the siege of the Bastille had to be carried out by professional hoodlums, most of them imported into Paris from other countries, while Jean-Paul Marat expressed his disgust at the lack of any revolutionary fervor on the part of the Parisian people. But it did lead millions to believe, then and now, that these revolutionary actions were being taken by idealists in spontaneous support of the slogan's objective. For the conspirators have counted heavily from the day of Weishaupt on the human race being composed mostly of gullible fools. The same cruel and ruthlessly deceptive pretense as to goals and objectives has been used by the evolving and tightening conspiratorial oligarchy ever since. Like more modern and more specific versions of this completely synthetic and phony idealism, such as agrarian reform, civil rights, and the war on poverty, this ringing phrase, Liberté, Égalité, Fraternité, even in its various paraphrases and translations, has brilliantly dramatic qualities for leading fools into the net which tyrants have prepared to entrap them. It is important to realize, therefore, that what the insiders who control this conspiracy really seek and have always sought to achieve in the name of liberty or liberation is complete enslavement of the masses. In the name of equality is the greatest difference in living conditions between the oligarchy at the top and the slaves at the bottom that history has ever seen. And in the name of fraternity or brotherhood, the most extensive and pervasive distrust, dissension, and resentment between all possible groupings of the population that can be contrived as a means of making all of these divided people easier to rule.
Stop the cassette now and turn it over for the continuation of the program on side 2.